listening to the North Peace MB Church Roundtable Podcast. For more information, visit npmbchurch.com.
Welcome to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast, audio and video. Thank you for joining us. If you are listening in your car and you can't see us, there's three of us here. My name's Andrew, and with me, as always, is Corland.
Hello, hello.
And Cameron.
Good morning.
Speaking to your mic, Cameron.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Good morning. Normally,
what is
I'm
this?
The one that is right in the mic.
I know you are. Oh, man. But if you are new to listening, this is episode 20. So I would encourage you to subscribe in iTunes or Google or Spotify or on YouTube and go back and listen to the first 19 episodes. Wow, that's crazy. But yeah, what this podcast is every week we talk about a different aspect of theology or doctrine or the Bible and what that means and why it's important. We had recorded an episode last week and it was really good. And I went to like edit it and put an intro in, all that kind of stuff. And when I clicked play, this is what it looked like. And I was like, what? No, where's the audio? And we couldn't fix it. So we are going to redo episode 20. And hopefully we get that same kind of.
We should have just aired it and
yes.
Saw how many people
yeah,
responded.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
Like, oh, there's no words.
No responses? Oh, what are we doing?
Yeah. We need to step our game up.
Yeah, oh, man.
Anyways, new mics again.
And today is Corlin's anniversary of, what was it?
Ask proposal.
It? Proposal anniversary. Any big yeah. plans?
Survive.
Wow. Okay, pray for Corlin. Anyways, today today we want to talk about, I know in episode 19 we talked about creation and how God created everything. When we kind of talked about the whole young earth, old earth, can a Christian believe in evolution and that kind of stuff. And so today we want to go a little bit deeper into God creating human beings, I guess, and a bunch of questions about that. You know, how did God create humans? Why, or I guess, are humans unique and different from the rest of creation? And then specifically, what does it actually mean when we say, yeah, we're created in God's image? So I guess let's start with that first question. How did God create humans, and in what ways was that unique or the same? Corlin, what do you think?
I had to like hold back there because of something you told me not to say earlier. I was going to do the whole tingle fingers.
And he
intimately
goes
created
and
us.
Intimately.
oh, man. Well, believe it or not, we have the creation account to give us some eyes in on that story.
Spoiler alert. Eh?
Yeah, spoiler alert if any of you haven't read Genesis. I believe it's chapter 2 where he talks, or where the Bible talks about the creation of mankind and how God formed us from the dust of the earth and then breathed the breath of life, his breath of life into us, and that we were made in their image. In their image, I'm speaking of the Trinity.
Yeah. Yeah, if you read chapter 1, and I had one professor who described it as like chapter 1 is like the 30,000-foot view. It's kind of like this big view of God creating everything. And we noticed, and I think we talked about it last week, that God speaks everything into existence, right? He says, let there be light, and boom, there's light. Let there be animals, and there's animals. And then you get to verse 26, and God says, let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And then, I won't read it all, but, you know, God blesses them and says, be fruitful and multiply and have dominion over everything, basically. Mm-hmm. And then what you just referenced, yeah, chapter 2, it's almost like a zoom-in view, right? Okay, here's how I created everything. And then chapter 2, the author kind of goes, let's go in a little bit deeper. And it says, Oh, man. There it is. Chapter 2, verse 7. Then the Lord God formed the man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And the man became a living creature. And then God, you know, puts Adam in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, he makes Eve out of a rib from Adam, which is kind of interesting.
I always remember growing up being either being told or thinking, I can't remember which one it was, if it was just my own thoughts that were telling me this. I always remember thinking that men had one less rib than women did.
Because, I thought that too.
Because, you know, we had a rib taken, right? So one side is lopsided. And
always kind of looking at women like, you thief, you've got my rib. But I thought that too for the longest time. Yeah. And then people are like, oh yeah, your ribs grow back. Like they grow back if you removed a rib. I was like, oh, I didn't know that. I had no idea.
I'm
okay.
Like a lizard.
Oh my. It's interesting when you read and it says that God breathed life into them, because there's nowhere else in like where he breathes life into the forests or the animals or the slithers. So it's this really neat distinction right out of the gate that something is different about this creation. Something is different and unique. And so, that's just the first thing that I noticed when I read through that account. Because then you start to think about then the responsibility given to man.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of neat. And then, you know, it's like we're created to work, to create in some way. And so I wonder if there's a relation there between the image of God and like his nature to create and to make something beautiful.
Hmm.
And that's that instinctual something inside of us that we really feel fulfilled when we create.
Yeah.
And I think there's something there that's pretty neat.
Yeah, I like that we like share similarities with the rest of creation. I mean, literally, we're made out of dirt.
The Bible literally says we are creatures.
Yeah, and we're made from dust from the ground. So one guy I listened to is like, we're literally earthlings. Like, literally, we're made from the earth.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, if you've been to funerals, and I don't think they say it anymore, but like the graveside, right? Ashes to ashes, dust to dust. I don't remember the rest of it. We don't want to go, but we must. We must. No, that's not it.
No. I think I was creeped out after the first
couple of lines. Yeah. I don't know the rest of it.
No.
But literally, because and I was listening to the Bible Project podcast, which is super interesting. And he's really good at all these like Hebrew things and culture. And that's literally what they would do. They would bury their loved ones in like a tomb. And then, you know, 6 months to a year later, go back and collect the bones. And what was left, like, just decayed matter. Like, just, and maybe it was longer than that, but, and then I didn't know that, but they would put the bones in, like, a family bone box and then have that in their house. And it's like, that's kind of weird. But, I mean,
we
do that if you keep the ashes of someone, right?
Right.
Yeah. And literally, when you die, your body decomposes and become dust again. Like, it's quite fascinating that we share that, like, we're creatures made from dust, and yet, like you said, Cam, God doesn't do that with every other animal, right? He didn't, like, form a dog from the dust and breathe life into it. He just said, let there be animals, and then they all...
Yeah.
I don't know if you've read The Magician's Nephew when Aslan's creating, right? And he's just kind of, like, singing, and then the earth kind of just swells, and then animals come out of it. I'm like, I don't know if that's how it happened, but that's pretty cool. It's
funny how media can, I would say, potentially give us some insight as to what it would look like. I'm not saying The Magician's Nephew is a creation account in the sense of like, that's how it happened. But like, it's interesting to see the different ideas of what people think that process would have looked like. And I think that although we're trying to discuss kind of what that looks like with this question, nobody really knows exactly what it would have looked like in the process of man and other creatures being created, right? I remember watching a movie when I was younger, and it's just kind of the solidified version in my brain of what it would have looked like. And it opens with the nothingness being like this, and maybe this is a wrong terminology, but it's like this psychedelic trip of colors. It looks like you're looking through a kaleidoscope, and then suddenly they just have like animated water for the formless earth, right? And then they go through the process of saying what God created and stuff, but when God created living creatures on the land, they just have like an elephant bust through some leaves kind of thing. Like it's not, everybody has a different idea of specifically what it would have looked like whether it was a cartoon little and then they were there, or whether they were formed from the ground, right? Like,
yeah.
We don't know those details because we're not given them.
Yeah.
And I think then that that's why in a podcast like today, we're going to be getting to the question of what does it mean to be made in the image of God? Because that's the key phrase, I would say, aside from when he's giving humanity life, key phrase that separates us from the rest of creation. And that's kind of what we're wanting to look into today.
Yeah. So why don't we go there then? Because yeah, you see similarities where, because I think some people, we can elevate it too high. Oh, we're just like God. Well, no, we're still created beings, mm-hmm. right? And we're created from dust. So we're very connected with earth. We're literally earthlings.
We're very physical beings.
Yeah, we are physical beings made from, like, dust. And yet God breathes his breath into us. And so then there's this dignity and worth and value that are given to human beings that aren't given to animals. Not to say that, like, yeah, we don't care about animals. Well, no, because God created them. Mm-hmm. But I care far greater about a baby than like a puppy, right? And unfortunately, I think maybe some people's views are twisted on that. But we should, because yeah. human beings are far more valuable than animals. They have God's breath breathed into them. So, but if you go back to Genesis 1 and it says God created male and female in his image. And Corlin, I'm going to throw it to you first since you kind of brought it up. So what does that mean when human beings, God, verse 27, God created man in his image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. So both males and females are created in God's image. What does that mean?
Well, I think that a lot of people, when they read verse 27 in chapter 1 there, with the male and female, he created them. I think that we like to latch on to little things that our brain can understand. So we understand male and female. And so we'll latch on to something like that and try and fit God into those boxes, as we've said before, right? So we'll take male and female, and then, well, God's gotta have a gender because that. But I think that what we're asking today isn't along those lines. What we're trying to ask is, like, do we physically look like God?
Yeah. So do we?
Spiritually? I don't know. I would say...
That's the North Peace Roundtable Podcast. Yeah.
I would say that we are made in the image of God, but our spirituality reflects that more than our physical.
Okay. That's good. So, because I think maybe there's multiple right answers, right?
Absolutely. There's multiple.
So, yeah, we have souls. Right. I can't find anywhere in the Bible that says animals have souls. Right. Yeah. Right. So,
but every human being on the planet looks similar. And if we're made as a mirror to some degree there, then physicality would have to have something to do with it. But I think where we can get stuck is thinking it's, you know, the,
does God have eyebrows like me?
Yeah.
Does or the Caucasian Jesus painting in every church basement, right?
Yeah.
That's a big issue, because if we were even to begin down that path of, you know, do we physically, is that what God was envisioning when he created us? Obviously it was, because that's how we've ended up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's on like a global average. Like, I think our perception, just because of the region of the world we're raised in, a very Western blessed region, we'd have a different, I think if we all did the sketching thing like they do in school, I think we'd be a little off at the end.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, well, yeah. So maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, the Bible says, I should look it up, where it talks about that.
Just start throwing out it. It's in there.
That God is spirit. John 4:24, right? God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. So I think, and again, we're not given the absolute bottom line answer, but I think there is, like you said, the spiritual aspect of human beings. I think that reflects a certain aspect of being made in God's image. And lots of people have had dozens of ideas, right? Is it our ability to reason? The fact that we are moral creatures, right? Yeah. Like, lions don't go to jail when they kill a zebra. Like, that's not murder. but we have morality. Is that an aspect of being made in God's image? And then you think about like kindness and all of these attributes that, yeah, we can kind of reflect that too, to a lesser degree. You know, God is patient and kind and loving and gracious and merciful. And human beings have a capacity to have those kind of attributes too. Yeah. So I think there can be a whole bunch of answers, but the one I think I want to press in on a bit is, and the Bible kind of tells us the answer, I think. You know, if you just look at the text, right? And I remember, Cam, last time we recorded, you're like, oh, you're one of those guys. because I think my thinking has been challenged a bit. Like, what would the original hearers of this, right? So originally it was orally told, but then, you know, tradition tells us that Moses wrote the first five books of the Bible. And so the Israelite would have had that, like, on scrolls, right? And so when they heard God said, and I'm not going to try and pronounce all these things in Hebrew, I don't know, whatever, right? Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion. I think the original readers would have heard that and said, oh, so being made in God's image has to do with dominion, because it's right there, right? Mm-hmm. Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and then God says, and I want you to have dominion. And then he says it again, right? God blessed them, and God said, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion. So I think there's an aspect of being made in God's image where it's to do with us ruling on behalf of God. Like he says, I've created everything. I want you to go on dominion now over it.
Yeah.
Now, what are some I'll ask the question in a sec, because Psalm 8 kind of says a similar thing. David is reflecting on creation. Right? You've set your glory above the heavens. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you set in place, what is man that you're mindful of him and the son of man that you care for him? Yet you've made him a little lower than the heavenly beings and crowned him with glory and honor. And you've given him dominion over the work of your hands. You've put all things under his feet. And then he lists sheep, oxen, beasts, birds, fish, whatever passes along the paths of the sea. So yeah, I think one of the aspects of being made in God's image, when you read Genesis 1, when you read Psalm 8, it's being made in God's image. One of the aspects is having dominion. And I think that's what people would have heard right away, right? Oh, we're made in God's image and he told us to have dominion. Okay, so we rule and we reign on God's behalf here on earth. So I know that it has negative connotations because you think about just really bad kings and rulers, and you think people who have dominion, like Assyria, Babylon, Rome, Nazi Germany, were like, oh, they're ruling and reigning? Like, so I think we have negative, no. Having dominion is almost seen as like this bad thing, right? Like,
yeah, I'd say it's at least today. I don't know if it was back then. I wasn't there, but today, especially amongst younger age groups, that terminology of having, you know, dominion or to dominate over someone is, like you said, it's got some pretty negative and sinful and wrong connotations behind it most of the time, not all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But even down to simple things, like there's a song by one of the artists that I listen to, Christian artist. He sings a song about how he wants God to rule over him, but he uses the language of, you know, dominate me. And if I'm honest, I get uncomfortable when I listen to that song. It's because of like the way our culture is formed these days. It's a negative word for the most part. Especially when someone is dominating over you.
Yeah.
But I think that biblically, and when we look to how God and Jesus rule over creation or domineer over creation, they're not negative things at all.
Right.
Right. And I think language evolves too, because it's dominate's not a word I've ever used in common language.
Yeah.
And so when
I dominated that 1,000-piece puzzle.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, to have dominion, I was sharing offline, dominion's a word I've only ever seen on a lumber store growing up. Dominion lumber.
Yeah.
And so I think we can get a little weird and sticky like that by, you know, now if we walk around saying we're going to dominate over things, it's a little strange. Yeah. But when we consider the fact we've been given this responsibility to manage well, to rule well, to, you know, control, and in control is another word that falls into that category of what do you mean you're going to control something? But we've also, you know, mankind has just ruined that idea by doing it so poorly. But and also thinking, you know, when you think of ruling something, what jumps into your mind? Having some sort of esteem, some sort of leadership.
Power.
Forgetting that, you know, King David was the boy ruling that flock of sheep well, managing what he was given, supervising God's creation, killing when he needed to protect, you know, so he, navigating that whole, he had dominion over his entire responsibility to the point where he was promoted by God himself. And if we can't think of in our own lives, well, actually, I can have, I can rule well and manage well everything God's been given to me. Everything's God's given me, and I might bag groceries at Save-On.
Yeah.
It's completely fine because you are ruling well to every responsibility God's given you.
Yeah.
Where we get stuck is saying, well, obviously I don't have dominion over anything because I'm not important or I don't have anything. Because those original hearers, they not just heard and read what that responsibility was, but they saw it lived out.
Yeah.
And they had God close to them. Well, that, you know, I'm not sure if we've captured it, and I'll say it again. Like, you know, when I skim through that portion of the Bible, it's like reading rules. But when you actually read through that, it's actually reading instructions on how to rule well.
Yeah.
How to not overconsume, how to not waste.
Yep.
And we
take care of the poor, take care of widows, all these rules designed for that. Yeah.
To rule well means to rule with everyone and to not dominate in the sense of forgetting anyone, but to have dominion to the point where your lowest are also taken care of, because you're not having dominion well if you're forgetting anything or anyone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or if your dominion causes you to trample other people, you're not ruling well.
Yep. And I go for it.
I think that that's where, when God gave humanity dominion over creation, and then I imagine Adam and Eve lived well in that for a little while before the fall. But after the fall, we see sin enter the picture, and then humanity, for lack of a better way of saying it, sucks at dominating over creation, sucks at ruling, right? We see so much sin and corruption in every single aspect, not just the big rulers of the day, not just the powerful people in your city. You see every individual person. If you look deep down, we all suck at ruling on our own terms.
So how can we get better, Corbin?
What a millennial.
If you follow my steps,
this sucks.
Well, it's true. Would you not agree?
But so you're tapping into a really neat theme throughout the entire Bible. Because then you have the kingdom of this world, which is exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. It sucks. Or it's just wicked. And then you have the kingdom of God, which all these rule, and Israel was meant to be this picture. I want you to be set apart. Don't be like these other kingdoms.
Yeah.
Because even, when you think about dominion, Adam and Eve, what was their dominion? I'm going to put you in a garden, and I want you to take care of it, essentially, right? So, like, farming. Not like, by the way, I want you to, like, be in charge of, like, 100 slaves. Like, no, that's not dominion, right? And it's quite fascinating. Like, you think about our world. If you bought a field, for instance, and you just let it, you did nothing to it. Would stuff grow? Yep. Like, stuff just, the earth naturally grows, probably weeds, but stuff grows. And part of having dominion was Adam and Eve, like, I want you to actually, like,
tend to it.
Like, clear the weeds, plant tomatoes, then you can, like, you have tomatoes now to eat and maybe share with your neighbor, and like, that's more so. And then, like, animal husbandry, and you're gonna train horses and train like, you know what I mean? So that in my mind is this beautiful picture of having dominion. But you're right, Corlin, the fall happens, and even in the relationship between man and wife, what does it say? Your desire is going to be for your husband, and what? And he'll rule over you, which is this picture of brokenness.
Yeah.
And then it's fascinating because you read, and the first superpower that you encounter, but by that I mean nation, not like, I can fly! The first powerful nation that you encounter is Egypt.
Yeah.
And Moses goes in Exodus 4 to or 5, or one of those, and he goes to Pharaoh, let my people go. God says that. And Pharaoh's response is, who's Yahweh? Right. Like, who are you even talking about? And I have no idea who that is. I don't care about that. Like, I have my kingdom, which is built upon slavery and taxation and just terrible policies, right?
Yeah.
And then throughout the whole Bible, it's this picture of here's God's perfect kingdom and what it's supposed to look like, and here's what humanity has done with it, and it's just awful until the very end, Revelation. And Babylon is represented there, and God finally overthrows it. It's meant to represent any nation that has ever opposed him and sets up his kingdom forever. So it's this, it is this beautiful storyline in the picture of, and then Jesus comes, and it's almost like God says, okay, this is what I wanted you to do.
Yeah.
Right. He's the second Adam, and he does it perfectly. Right. He has dominion, and he rules, and he reigns, and he's still ruling and reigning. But it's like, you know, we messed it up so royally that God's like, okay, fine, I'll come and do it myself. I'll show you what I meant for you to do, right?
Because when we read that in the creation account, we don't put ourselves in the mindset of, okay, we're given this responsibility to rule. We're shown, you know, plants to eat, animals to eat. But that's pre-fall, still in relationship with God, where we're not having dominion over people. Because in that space, they're still, God's still there, ever-present king.
Yeah.
And it's almost like we've been given, well, what we see is that when the further mankind walked away from that after the fall, it was like, well, now we are to be exalted because we've been given, you know, commands to rule.
Yep.
It's like, wait a minute, that original command was given in the structure of everything surrendered to God.
Yeah.
Present with God.
And the story of Israel is they still failed miserably. God said, I want this nation to be an example. And like early on, what do they say? We want a king like everybody else. And it's like, I wanted you to not be like all the other. Right. Yeah. And so then God, gives them a king. And it's interesting because some of the rules for the king, it's fascinating when you read the Old Testament. They weren't supposed to stockpile horses because then that's their own strength and power. Right. They weren't supposed to. They were supposed to write out a copy of the Torah for themselves to remember, like, you're not the big cheese around here. Like, God is. And yet, you know, I think out of, there's something like 40 kings in the history of, if you read 1st and 2nd Kings, and like 7 of, or 8 of them are good.
Right.
And like 32 of them are just awful. Right. And so you see, and then Jesus comes, right? Because it's like God finally says, like, oh my goodness. I see God up in heaven, right? Just being like, ugh.
And they couldn't recognize Jesus' kingship.
No, right? Because it looked
so colluded and so dirty.
Because they saw Rome, and that must be what it means. And so Jesus must come to just annihilate Rome and set us up.
Over them.
Yeah, yeah, right? And Jesus dies. What? He dies for his enemies? That makes no sense.
But still having dominion and ruling.
Yeah.
Which is actually the flip side kingdom that is so difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
Because we see Jesus' whole existence as a ruler.
Yeah.
Especially as we read back. But in that moment, they're thinking the exact opposite. This is not ruling. This is not having dominion. That should tell us something today about how we have dominion.
Yep.
And how we rule in our lives. It has to come with the attributes that Jesus portrayed. You know, meekness, gentleness, forcefulness. When it's like this balance of Jesus' attributes is how we have to rule today.
Yep.
Because we're still given that instruction. So we can't, like I said, we can't back away and just ignore that responsibility and decide, well, I'm not going to risk messing up my ruling, so I'm just going to be my own private Christian in my closet and not rule anything.
Yeah.
And then I'm good.
Yeah.
We've seen that parable too lived out, and we saw the results of that, of not acting through this responsibility. And we will make mistakes because we are broken.
Yeah.
We deal with selfishness and pride. But we constantly have to be thinking about the way we navigate our own families and the way we navigate our roles at work. How can I rule well? Because that is the counterculture pushback, is you can rule well in whatever you do.
Mm-hmm.
You can have. And David, like I said, is a good example of just being chosen as one who ruled well in his space. And we would look at that space. We've heard stories and narrative of shepherds. He would have grown up to be stereotyped into this, you know, dirty people.
Mm-hmm.
But he had dominion well. And so I think we have to, like I said, as we go about our day, think about how we're honoring that responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're using the terminology of domineering and dominating a lot. What characteristics do we see God show that we can know when we see these characteristics that he is doing that well? Because I think that we're using a single word to describe what it means to be made in the image of God, but there's a lot encapsulated in that. So what would you say are some of the maybe the big things that we can pick out of that and kind of lay out on the table for, like, what does it mean to domineer well? I know that we've talked a little bit about that, but, like, what character traits would we reflect because God's made us in his image, and how do we use that in our lives to show who God is?
Oh, that was a deep question. Yeah, I mean, so, yeah, how do we image God in day-to-day life? Like, how do we rule and reign and have dominion? Because it I think that's a big aspect, is what you're saying. And then I'm trying to understand your question. So what you're saying is, what does that look like, basically, in like everyday life, right? So I go to work, I have kids, I'm married. Like, what's that? What's my mindset like? Am I having dominion? I think, yeah. So because here's what I think we sometimes do as Christians. To be a good Christian, I have to always be looking for ways to, like, sneak the gospel in. Which, sure, hear me out before you're like, "What? We're not supposed to do that." That's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But I think we don't realize that. I think it goes so much farther beyond that, where, you know, I've used the example, and I remember when we tried to record this last time, I used this example, right? I always use the example of a baker. Maybe I wanted to be a baker. I don't know why, but I always use that example. But I think sometimes we assume, okay, well, to be a Christian baker, you got to, like, you know, put verses on all your cakes, right? Or, like, have a cheesy Christian bakery name.
Right.
Or, like,
Hebrews Cafe.
Yeah, 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 right. Or like
bread.
Or like anyways, I was gonna go down a rabbit trail, which I'm not going to, because it's, yeah, anyways. But I think that's what we think, right? Or right. In every box of I put a gospel track or whatever, right? But what if being made in God's image is that you're just a really good baker, and you use quality ingredients, and you don't overcharge people, and you care about what it looks like because you want to create beauty. Like, I think that's an aspect where you are imaging God, because God cares about beauty and justice and fairness. Mm-hmm. So I don't think you necessarily have to be thinking, whatever job you're in, okay, I better order like 1,000 gospel tracts and try and sneak them in. Maybe. But what if you just did your job really well?
Yeah,
I think that's where we're made in the image of God, is that we aspire to get closer to his attributes. And
yeah,
that's righteous living.
Yeah.
So in anything we do, if we're thinking through, or we're looking through a lens of love, honesty, just living, then I think that would be ruling well our own minds to begin with, capturing thoughts and choosing to, walk in righteousness. I think we can dominate our own flesh first.
Sure.
Maybe that's where we begin.
Yep.
And when we're considering, our roles in the workplace or our roles in daily life, if we're aspiring to be God-like in that healthy way of wanting to be more just and peaceful, that's going to actually flow out in all of these avenues of life.
Yep.
And I've met those people where I've gotten close to them and I'm like, wow, this person is just so godly, but they're not doing anything special, and they wouldn't even think that they are. They're just that type of person. And there are those people around this church.
Because it's meant to, like, for people to look at that and see God's attributes in us. I love that, like, the word literally, like, it, let's make man in our image. It's the word for idol, right? It's like, and so God's, I love, it's so funny and quite amazing. God creates idols. That's the word. People were, and yet then he says to the Israelites, like, I don't want you to make any idols, right? Because basically, the world's already full of them. You're already images of me.
Yeah.
Don't go and make other images. Like, just reflect who I am. And so I think then part of being a Christian is we reflect God. We aren't God. Making sure I'm clear, right? We can't. Mm-hmm. We don't become God. We simply reflect his attributes. But then it's almost like people should look at that and go, man, like, what is it about you? And then you can say, right? I love Jesus and I made in his image and I want people to see that. And like, you know, not in a, now let me bash you over the head with it. Mm-hmm. But when I see Christian people, like when I see fathers, for instance, and non-Christian fathers can be great too. Don't hear me wrong. But when I see that mindset and like fathers are sacrificing for their families and loving their kids well and helping their wives flourish, I think that's an aspect of having dominion and ruling and reigning well. It's meant for human flourishing, right?
Yeah.
Anytime you see dominion happening that is like crushing and doing the opposite of that, well, that's not godly dominion, mm-hmm. right? Godly dominion was so that the earth and humanity flourished, right? That's how we rule and reign. So I think in any aspect of your life, when you see your kids flourishing, when you see your spouse flourishing, when you see your business flourishing, I think you can go, yeah, I'm having dominion. I'm ruling and reigning like God wants me to. I think that would be a good baseline, right? If you're mistreating your employees and they hate you and like and your kids are suffering underneath you, you're probably like, I'm not really imaging God well right now.
And I think it could be, if you are stuck in a consumerist mindset of just consumption and not giving back, I think we have to also remember to rule well, because you know none of us probably look after animals right now. We don't own our own.
I have a dog and a cat.
Oh, sorry, I mean. But you know, you know what I mean. Or if you don't own vast amounts of property, like you said, in your fields, we still have a we can't ignore that responsibility. Yeah. So how do we do that? I mean, at the very least, recycle well. You know, it might sound so silly,
but it's
true. At the very least, recycle well.
Right? You know?
And at the very least, be mindful of.
Don't be wasteful. Like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, and I think Christians in the past have done maybe a bad job of that.
Sure.
Because I think sometimes we equate Christianity, and this is more an American thing, but with like Republican capitalism. That's what it means to be a Christian and just like get rich or die trying kind of thing. And that, and so I think, but then you can swing the other way where you already mentioned that, where it's like, well, we can't eat any animals. We can't, right? But where's that balance where you're being a good steward of what God has given you, and you're taking care of the earth, and you're doing your part, you're driving your electric car. I'm just kidding.
I think that's where we can, like, when we look for example of this that's been done well, as we've already said too, we can look to Jesus.
Yeah, totally.
Because God sent his son to essentially show us and teach us how to be good images of him, how to be an image of him. And you had talked about the commandments, you know, essentially teaching them how to be good rulers, right? And Jesus, when the Pharisees asked him what the greatest commandments are, he said to love the Lord your God and love your neighbor.
Yep.
And if we're doing those two things, then I think that it becomes a lot easier and more common for us to reflect the image of God well, because if we're loving God, we're going to obey what he said.
Yeah.
And if we love our neighbor, then we won't rule over them poorly because we love them, right? Mm-hmm. If you truly love something, chances are when it does something wrong, you're not going to pound it into the ground.
Yeah.
Unless it's a tent peg and you like camping, but like.
Wah, wah. I'm like,
practicing dad jokes.
That was a dad joke. Yeah, you're not even a dad yet. Man, he's good. Oh, he is good.
Still level one, but that's okay.
Yeah. No.
But yeah, we can look to Jesus for a good example of how to rule.
Totally.
And the Bible is not short of example with him and from him on how to do that.
Yeah. So I think, it just lends incredible worth to kind of anything that we do, whether it's taking care of your yard or you're working. You know, I often think, because I've talked with some stay-at-home moms who kind of go, man, what I do doesn't really have any kingdom impact. Yes, it does, massively. Yeah. Like, you are exercising dominion over your family and how you create beauty in your own home. Like, that's really important, because I think sometimes, and we should end with this because everybody's got to go to work. But I think sometimes we view like, oh, I'm not doing enough for God you know, if I was really passionate about God, I would tell more people about him and go to some other part of the world and, like, be a missionary. And sure, you should tell people about Jesus, but I think sometimes we do that to ourselves. All the while, you are, like, raising your kids to be really good citizens and who hopefully love Jesus, mm-hmm. and you're a really good employee, and you show up early, and you work hard, and you do all these other things, and I think sometimes we go, I'm a terrible Christian because I've never been on a mission trip. Okay, well, is that the barometer, right, mm-hmm. where we go like, oh, you have a great family and you're a great husband and a great father and a great employee, but you're not doing quite enough. No, like, right. I think we've done that, unfortunately, yeah. in whatever Christendom, where we've created, like, that guy is, like, super awesome, loves Jesus, and me over here, I don't.
They're super Christian.
Right? And so I think, yes, we want to make disciples and we want to tell people about Jesus, but part of being made in God's image is the just how you live your life, right? Mm-hmm. And what kind of employee you are and what kind of spouse you are and what kind of parent you are and how you interact with your neighbors, like, that has incredible value and worth. So don't, I know too many Christians that just beat themselves up because they're doing a lot of things well, and yet they go, oh man, I'm not doing enough. And it's kind of like, well,
Works.
Yeah, kind of, right? Mm-hmm. So just take heart that the Christian life is meant to, yeah, we want to reflect Jesus and become more like him and display his attributes in the world. And yes, tell people about him. But I think sometimes we just beat ourselves up to no end because it just feels like, well, I'm not doing enough. I haven't told enough people and this and that. And so I would say almost like rest a little bit. Don't be lazy, right? But like rest. Like Jesus has done everything for us. And think of ways in your everyday life, how can I image God well so that people maybe go like, man, what is different about that guy? Why does that guy care so much about his work? And then maybe that'll win you an audience to say, well, here's why personally I care about my work so much.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, not so that it's a works-based thing to make sure that you're performing, but to do it in reverence to what God has done for you, and so that you can hopefully through that, like you said, gain opportunity to teach the gospel to people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe we'll leave it there. And hopefully the audio worked this time. No, it did. I know it did. but hopefully that's been helpful to you. And we would just encourage you to subscribe to the podcast, either in iTunes or Google Podcasts or Spotify. Or you can watch the podcast on YouTube if you like seeing our beautiful faces. I joked that, like, the camera does add 10 pounds. And we've got like three cameras right here. That's why we look the way we do. But subscribe on YouTube. And hopefully that's been helpful to you. And we will talk to you next week.